Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, well, well. Good afternoon to you. Todd here. WTIC, are you sick of talking, thinking, feeling, having the whole world controlled by a virus, invisible little microscopic, submicroscopic things that are only half alive? They can't reproduce unless they have a cell to kidnap. What's that all about? And yet they've been around forever, since the first of even little single-cell creatures existed. They've been viruses. That's what they... And who cares? Our world has been so collapsed over the past few weeks. It's kind of amazing. We've only been really locked up for, depending on your approach to it, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, a week, 3 weeks. Anyway, I'm wondering if you're sick of it and want to talk about something else. Call and talk about anything other than my corona. Anything else. Have you had a thought, an idea, a wish? Something other than this darn virus. And these politicians, let me just complain a little bit. This is my gripe. These politicians with their press conferences, can't they take them somewhere else? Ned at 4 today, the president at 5. They do their things on our airtime during our get together. Anyway, what do you want to talk about? Anything in the world that strikes your fancy, but try to avoid the virus. Unless that's too, maybe that's too tall of an order. In which case, I have, inspired by the virus, but sidestep the virus topics, like this. Have you gotten a good business idea because of the virus? See, the virus starts it off, but it's not really a conversation about the virus. It's a conversation about human ingenuity and the beauty, the power of capitalism and entrepreneurship. Or activities. Have you discovered new activities since the virus? Again, it's a trick question. It looks like it's about the virus, but it's not really. It's about human beings and our creativity. And about how important it is for life to change. I feel this is the great gift, the optimist that I am, of the virus, is that we need to be held up once in a while. We need someone to rob the bank of routine and empty it out and fill it up with something truly precious. Well, routine can be precious, it's true. But every once in a while, the thing you love becomes your jailer and you need to be broken out. True or false? 860-522-9842. I want to have fun, in other words. Let's have fun. Hosts just want to have fun. Capiche? All right, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Todd. Sorry, I'm going outside. Kids are crazy inside. So the difference I'm seeing here in leadership styles, I think, is really interesting. you have, there was an article in the Hartford Current, or excuse me, an op-ed, where two people, I don't remember who they were, saying, we need to have the government take over these industries and start making the stuff that we need. And that's one style we've seen here. We've seen it with most of the Democrat governors and Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio, which is, we're going to tell you what to do, we're in charge, and we're going to make you comply. And then you have sort of the leadership role, which is Donald Trump, among many others, who said, listen, let's talk to each other. If you think about what it took to get all these leaders of big corporations such as Walmart and Walgreens to the White House very early on in this, that was a real leadership, where he went and talked to people and said, hey, we need your help here. You're an American. You can do this. Let's use peer pressure and conversation as opposed to authoritarian power. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks watching all of this, that there's these two different styles going on. And I think it's a real lesson about life, and not only politics, but life in general.
I always find that surprising, that people go to the thing that we've learned our whole lives is not our system. Does that ever strike you that there's this instinct to do the un-American thing, or to do the undemocratic thing, after all the proselytizing we are the recipients of about the beauty of democratic values? And as soon as anything goes amiss, pothole in the road, bring in the dictators.
I don't think it's that at all. I think it's something totally different. It's people have never been in true leadership positions. I see this all the time in grassroots politics groups. You have a lot of great people who just, it's a whole different skill set to lead an organization where you have to earn people's respect to be a leader. A lot of people, especially in business, get put into power positions. Same thing in politics. Well, I'm a state rep, so therefore you listen to me, or I'm this or I'm that. And I think it's more of the type of people that are attracted to politics, and business people who are successful at this usually don't see this day to day. And I think that's what the difference is.
Don't see what day to day?
They don't see dealing in leadership day to day, of how to talk to people, how to convince them willingly to do something. That's a skill set. And most of the people who have those skills go into the private sector to make it. And most of the people who get involved in government, whether as elected officials, they're just looking for power. They're ambitious, and they're looking for power and control. But real leadership.
Yeah. I like what you're bringing up, Sean. This is an interesting idea, and that is that, if you watch certain governors be uncomfortable in the skin of their job, the authority that they are supposed to be asserting, that authority, I think this is what Sean is saying, that authority comes from within. And if you're a commanding personality and know how to deal with people, you actually get people to do the things you want them to do without them understanding exactly what you're up to, what methodology you're using. You just kind of bring them along with you. 860-522-9842, JR in Naugatuck. Hello there.
Hey, how you doing, Todd? Listen, you said you think of something other than the gloom and doom stuff that we've been all talking about, something a little more light. And how you can profit from the virus. You know what? In my era, we had the Vietnam War and everything. We had all these folk singers singing about the war and everything. And why don't we get some folk singers there? Take the dust off them, bring them up, and start singing about the coronavirus. Peter, Paul, and Corona. Or something, get something, and
I thought folk music was the plague.
Yeah, I hated it too. Let me tell you, I hated it too. Yeah, I did. But in this case, a little tongue in cheek stuff to cheer the masses,
No, I like that. I mean, there is a lot of, I'm seeing a lot of that on the internet, people sending around these funny things.
Well, can you imagine what's his name who does that song, Margaritaville, one lost shaker of salt? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Well, something like that. You have an upbeat like that, one lost hand sanitizer and salt or something, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I just thought I'd cheer you guys up.
Well, that's a good way to approach this topic. The idea is to talk about things that are unviral and see if we have it in us, even, because I'm worried about my own lack of imagination. I envision motivate myself by going out, seeing people, chatting with strangers, chatting with friends, hearing their reactions to things. I like sitting in a coffee shop next to people I don't know and eavesdropping on their conversations, you know, and that gives me ideas. How do you get ideas if you're trapped in the house all day and you can't go out and chat with a neighbor even without putting on a mask and gloves? Do you own gloves, by the way? I don't have any gloves. I have a mask because somebody gave us a little stack of masks, but we haven't worn one yet. I don't know what to do. I'm not that much of a conformist that I can find pleasure in all this stuff. Abby's calling from Meriden. Hey, Abby.
Hello, how are you?
What's on your mind? I'm virus-free so far, so I'm pleased.
That is a good thing. So I noticed something on all the different talk radio shows when they're talking about our nation. There's a tendency to talk about its democratic nature. And rarely do people make reference to the fact that we're actually a republic. And I think that's confusing for the young people who in our schools are being taught all about democracy and very little about why we're a republic and why that's important. And I think that there's an urgency, especially at this juncture in our history, for us to be very clear that being a republic means that we're ruled by law, that law is king, and it's not arbitrary. And every young person out there understands the arbitrary nature of high school, where, you know, the popular girl is crowned prom queen and the popular boy is crowned prom king, and the unpopular ones, they get mocked and ridiculed and pushed aside, no matter whether they're the smartest kid in the school or maybe the most talented artist. Those values aren't always recognized. It's what's popular that gets recognized. And under law, it's different, and it protects the individual. And I think that a few moments ago you were talking about us having a democratic society, and while I value the democratic nature of our values, I feel it's so urgent to impress upon our young people that we are a republic ruled by law, and when we compromise law, and we make it arbitrary, it can bite you. It's a big problem.
I love it's a great distinction you're making, but I have this problem with the language that democratic values mean something different in my mind from the word democracy. We are not a democracy. We have a republican form of government. But if you look up republican in the dictionary, you don't really find anything except having to do with the political party. That doesn't carry meaning in our language and in our society. But saying we have democratic values, people understand what that is. And that's about power not resting in the hands of those on top, but flowing upwardly from those on the bottom to the people on top.
And while I completely agree with you as an educated person, I think that education in our school system has changed a lot, and semantics are something we can't overlook. And I just think that while we say that, we should clarify for the young people, because, again, I listen to my kids, you know, who are now graduated college themselves, but as they came up through the schools, it was a constant correction of, we're not a democracy. We have democratic values, and there's a blurred line there, and I think it's being done purposely, and I don't mean to be conspiracy theorist, but I do think there is an agenda at work and at play in our society with our young people to change the...
Well, whether it's mobilized around this language or not, I'm sure, but there is no doubt that there is the movement there to undo everything America is based on. I'm with you on that, Abby, and I thank you for the phone call. Yeah, I hear that a lot. Don't say this is a democracy. Don't say we have democratic values. But I don't know what language to use instead that actually has meaning. Thank you for the call. 860-522-9842. We're talking unviral things. Give us a call. We'll talk in just a moment on WTIC. Yeah, it's WTIC, just chit-chat. Virus untalk, or unvirus talk. What else is on your mind? Anything? Anything obsessing you these days? Jeff in West Hartford. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call. I thought it really interesting because on the Facebook posts I'm seeing, everybody's posting these fantastic prices for gas stations. And yeah. From listening to a lot of news, I realized that the Russians and the Saudis are having a gas war because the Russians wouldn't sign a price agreement or a quantity agreement of something or other. And we're enjoying the benefits of that. And I hear, well, you know, the oil companies are suffering and everything else. Well, it occurred to me that it seems in years past, they do their maintenance in the middle of the summer when we need the gas, or they do it in the middle of the winter when we need the fuel. And I'm wondering to myself, wouldn't this be a great time for them to shut down and do their maintenance?
You would think. Isn't that maintenance? I mean, I think you're talking about the seasonal changes in gas. Right. They have to, when it gets to be May or whatever, don't they switch formulas for certain parts of the country or
that's
something
true.
Like
they
that? And maybe that's what they do. Yeah. But the it's driven down by nobody's driving anywhere. Right. I mean, the price war is going on, but I don't know how much of a price war you need when nobody needs gas. It's kind of a bummer. You look at the prices and they like I got gas yesterday. And it was down 20 cents from the last tank I got. And I'm wow. thinking, wouldn't it be nice if we had somewhere to go? But we can't use it. What are we going to do?
This is true. I was thrilled when I was able to buy it under $2.
Was somebody? Was somebody making the argument that that the gas companies needed a bailout?
I wouldn't say a bailout. The comment was made that all companies are suffering, including the oil companies, and.
Yeah,
You know, it's.
I expect the oil companies have enough cash to get through the bad times, though.
Exactly, it's hard to have sympathy for somebody that's got so much in the marketplace already,
and just pumps money out of the ground, Jeff.
I know it's like free money. It is. I mean, I can imagine our exports are going down, and it might curtail some of the pumping because when the price is high, they'll pump it out of a stone.
Yes. Jeff, thank you for the call. I'm going to move on to get some other calls in. Doug in Chester, hello there.
Hey, good evening, sir. Doing an awesome job as usual.
Thank you.
Just wanted to talk to you about the importance of like the next month at least. It's going to be perplexive, and everybody has to have the best discipline that they've ever used. Like in their own, like they're going to have to observe self-discipline.
About what?
It's like, about what? Like, hello, we're talking about the coronavirus, are we not?
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the point is you're making.
Oh, the plan. Okay. 6 feet distance.
No, what's your point? So everybody needs to use discipline. Are you talking about to remain healthy, wear a mask? Are you talking about not going out and making contact with others? I'm not sure what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry to be so, like, I didn't explain what I meant. Like, actually, whoever was listening, like, the first thing of what you said, yes.
So, yeah, we do have to be disciplined, and it's going to be hard to maintain that, I think, Doug, because where, you know, it's only been a couple of weeks, and I think people are getting stir crazy already. Thank you so much for the call. We've got to get ourselves to our bottom of the hour news, and then we will talk more. 860-522-9842. We're looking for some unviral things to discuss. If you have anything, join us right now on WTIC. A rube is a boob, a boob, a rube. No snake can be led by a fool, you tool. Unless the state meets this fate with the feckless Jolly Ned. Go right to the marble and ask the guy. You'll find his answer contains a lie. His door's always open, but no one's by. Talk to Jolly Ned. Talk is cheap, Ned's rich with words that clog and block the way. But Jolly Ned will never speak unless he has nothing to say. You can't push a square into a round, but Ned's chasing spending that isn't sound. He's looking for love he's never found. He's looking for love that won't be found. He is Jolly Ned. Oh, man. That is tough to listen to, I'll tell you, me singing. Wow. Let's see. Let's go to Cindy in North Stonington. We got a request for Jolly Ned. That's why we played it again. Hi, Cindy.
That's good. We want to hear something lively.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I wanted to call because I think that one thing that is really not spoken about is that this is an opportunity to be with our families. And I'm happy to be off the hamster wheel of running around to driving this one to a sporting event or attending a an event that my daughter plays piano. You know, I have to drive to Danbury to see that. Everybody's home. We have dinner. We have meals together.
Isn't
it
great?
Interact
yes,
more.
Dinner.
It's awesome.
It's a beautiful thing to have dinner.
Yeah.
Together.
We cook together. We clean together. It's great. And I think that our country.
How old are your kids?
15 and 18.
That's good ages for that. So are you rediscovering them? Are you learning things about them you didn't know before?
I'm pretty much a stay-at-home mom, so I've been on top of it pretty much all along. But I find that they have no one else to go see, so they see me more now.
How beautiful is that? Really, what a gift as teenagers when they're normally going out into the world and forgetting that you exist if you're lucky.
Right.
This is really a special thing for you.
Exactly. I just think it's really great that that people have this opportunity. We have the time now. There isn't as much pulling us away from our family unit, whatever that is. And I don't know. I'm just very happy about it, and I hope that other people will embrace it too, as much as they can.
No, I think that's the key. We have to. That's exactly, to me, the way you have to approach everything in life. Thank you, Cindy, for that. Because this is something we could have been wishing for if we had enough imagination, to have an opportunity where the wheels of the world slow down enough that we can kind of hop on and off as we see fit, and we can get a lot of time doing things maybe we fantasize about doing. I don't know if enough people are grabbing on to the positive side of this. Okay, we'll take more phone calls in a few minutes, but we've got a guest here. Phil Kirpin is the president of American Commitment, here to talk about the virus and ways to respond to it and spending bills and whether they're good or bad. Phil, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Great to be with you.
Nice to have you here. So what's your reaction? I haven't yet gotten nearly as nervous about the virus itself as I have about the government response, which to me, the government response to everything is the true plague, the thing we have to fear. So I'm wondering if you look at it the same way.
Well, the virus itself is definitely causing a lot of harm. I think the policy responses are probably going to do more damage to more people for a longer period of time than anything the virus does itself. That said, you know, it's hard to separate the two in that as long as people are scared of the virus, they're not going to go to work, certainly in the same normal level and the same normal numbers as they would otherwise, regardless of the government policy. So it's not like the president could come out and say, hey, the coast is clear, go back to work. If people don't believe him that the coast is clear, then that wouldn't work. They would still stay in their homes for the most part. And so the economic fallout, I think, is going to end up being the big story for a long time, more so than the immediate medical impact of this, the extent to which...
Well, but hang on a second. You just gave me an idea, Phil. What if the government wasn't in the business of trying to seduce us all the time by having two parties fighting over who can give us more? What if they actually just saw their job as being to run the government, and that was as narrow a vision of running the government as you can imagine, and they felt like it was up to us to make these decisions and us to decide whether to go to work or not, and up to our employers to figure out how to make things sustain over time? What would happen then?
Well, it's a good question. I think that most people would behave pretty responsibly, and we'd see a pretty similar impact in terms of reducing transmission if we didn't have sort of the state and local sort of total shutdowns. And the federal policy actually is pretty much that. I mean, the federal policy, if you look at what they called for in the 15 days, which has now been extended, it's a lot of common sense stuff. You know, keep your distance. Don't go out unless you have to. Don't shake
hands. Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking more about the other side of it, Phil, the governmental side. If the government wasn't looking to pay us to be out of work and to pay companies not to produce and to support everybody in the shutting down of the economy so everybody remains whole, it seems to me that's the big lost opportunity, that societies need flux, like human lives need flux, that societies need to break down when they reach a point of breakdown so that they have the building materials out of which to build something new. And if we keep saving ourselves from ever crashing, then don't we just have systems getting more rigged all the time?
Well, there's something to that, but the reason it might make sense in this particular circumstance to offer emergency loans and rescue provisions and so forth is sort of analogous to a takings clause type situation, because it is government policy that dictated the shutdown called non-essential businesses. And so
nature really that dictated the shutdown, though, right? It was the virus. Like you say, it was going to happen one way or the other. And the question is, to me, and the thing I wanted to probe with you, is how do we feel philosophically about the government being the guarantor of life being as normal as possible for us, and that we are as buffered from reality as possible? I don't think that's an appropriate role for government. One, because I don't think you can succeed doing that. I think it's damaging that all of human life, all of nature requires that we experience the ups and downs. But if you build these artificial systems, then you're making the government the guarantor of everything. And that, how do you have a free society when they are that?
Well, It's a pretty good question. You know, I think from sort of a pure sort of philosophical standpoint, you could say maybe we should allow all of these businesses to fail and, you know, allow shareholders to be wiped out and then kind of deal with it in the same way that we would, any sort of normal market type situation. You know, the problem with that from a public health standpoint, and I think the reason that you're seeing most of the countries in the world do similar things to what we're seeing here, is the problem with that from a public health standpoint is if you leave the decision making to individuals, some significant number of them are going to value the economic benefits of being productive over the public health effects, which are largely not borne by themselves but borne by others if younger, healthier people would be sort of vectors of transmission. And so I think that the concept, the sort of the calculus that we're seeing from governments is sort of, let's not allow markets to resolve this the way they ordinarily would, because if we do that, they're going to value economic goods over public health goods, and that potentially allows for some pretty bad scenarios in terms of disease spread. And so
yes, but the trouble is I can't argue with what you're saying. All I can say is, well, if you have people guarantee that, if you have the government guarantee that people's lives are not carrying suffering because of what they like to call no fault of their own, the government likes to call it, right? This was no fault of their own. They need to be protected. Well, life is about confronting bad things that happen and good things that happen sometimes that were no fault of your own. That's life. And if you protect people from life, that has a cost too. And the government doesn't ever calculate that cost, but we end up paying it big time by having a government that keeps absorbing more responsibility. And I would just love to see some balance in the governmental response where it says, look, this is outside of the realm of what it's our job to do. But we feel
particularly in terms of some of the the personal financial obligations. We see people saying, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent or my mortgage unless the government does something. And if you actually think about it, you know, the bank has a pretty strong interest in giving forbearance in a situation like this and tacking months onto the end of the term instead, because they don't want to go into foreclosure, or they don't, you know, they would prefer not to have to take collection actions and that kind of thing in a circumstance like this. They're going to have a significant number of people who can't pay. And so when you don't have government solutions, sometimes private institutions will work out arrangements that government might not have even thought of, but might be superior in some respect. And so
also individuals will.
And individuals will.
Families will.
Well, here's where we're going to get to things being a little more similar to the way you'd like them to be, as opposed to what we're seeing here in the near term from government. The government can't float the economy indefinitely, and even the 6 weeks that they've now committed to for, you know, basically floating from a debt standpoint and, you know, from a spending standpoint, non-essential businesses, you know, we're going to be looking at a GDP hit of, I don't know what it ends up being, something like 30 or 40% most likely for the second quarter as a consequence of those actions. The government cannot put that on its credit card for 12 or 18 months. At some point, it becomes impossible. And so I think we are going to be facing a reckoning of sorts, where we have to figure out how we can actually get the economy substantially open again, at the end of this current period, or else we are going to see, a wave of sort of failures and economic convulsion as a consequence of this, without regard to what the government thinks they may be able to do to prevent that.
Yeah, so that's the scary part, is there is all this talk of the period of time that this virus requires being months and months and months, or a year or a year and a half. And that just isn't doable in any configuration of life that you want to design, with any role for government that you want to imagine. There's no way to make that work.
Well, that's right. I mean, I don't think that there's any way we can maintain a substantial shutdown of the U.S. economy for the 12 to 18 months that it takes before we have a proven vaccine that we can distribute, and then the disease threat is essentially eliminated. That we're going to have some significant period of time in which we balance the public health threat against our economic needs as a society. And, you know, we're in this acute period right now where we're trying to sort of catch up and get ahead of it. But well before we actually extinguish the virus, we're going to have almost everyone go back to work, and we're going to have to use aggressive testing and surveillance techniques to try to get ahead of it and keep things in check and make sure that our hospital resources are adequate and so forth, because we cannot, as a practical matter, keep the economy substantially closed until we have a vaccine. It's just going to be too long a period of time.
All right, Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment. The website is, let me see if I remember, americancommitment.org.
That's it.
I got it right. How about that? Thank you, sir. Good to talk with you once again.
All right. Have a good one.
Phil Kirpin, americancommitment.org. All right. So I want to keep pushing this theme that we just discussed with Phil Kirpin, but we don't need to discuss it right now because we're having kind of a light and lively non-virus conversation, which we can continue as well. Let's take a quick break, and we'll take some calls, 860-522-9842. Stay with us on WTIC. Paranoia strikes deep. WTIC. I know. I started off wanting to have a light conversation. Then we had that heavy kind of philosophical interview. But that's how it goes sometimes. 860-522-WTIC, and Greg calling from West Hartford. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my phone call. Hope you and your family are safe.
Thank you. We're good.
The question that I have for you is, why is the state of Connecticut letting trains run from northern New Jersey through Connecticut into New York City? It's just strange, because these three states have become kind of the epicenter, if you would, of all the coronavirus.
Yeah, so you're saying this is the COVID Express. It needs to be renamed.
That's why you're on radio, because that was very good. But yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's
that they're letting this happen.
But there are these contradictions in life, and one of the while Ned and the Connecticut government and other governments as well are trying to look as attentive and serious about the virus as possible, and not thinking about the economy. Of course, they're desperately worried about the economy, and they're desperately worried about paying the bills that they have to pay in order to make sure the people don't really get a handle on how destroyed the state is financially. And so they're panicked about the economy and looking for ways to keep it going. And they're also worried about elections in November, and they don't want to lay off. They don't want to lay off union employees of a rail system, which is the holy grail. Public transportation is the holy grail.
And for the first time, I'm kind of worried about what they're doing to have income coming in, because they're not selling as much gas. They're not getting sales tax, but they're worried about their connection to New York City and the stock exchange and Fairfield County and Northern New Jersey.
Yeah. So anything they can do to keep union workers from being upset. The environmentalists are already on edge because this is not a good time for environmentalism, and the rails are, for some reason, they have this mystical quality for the left. And to shut down the rail as something dangerous in this period of time would be hard for them to do. And they should, obviously. Why should it be running? Why would you have an express train bringing germs back and forth all day long? 860-522-WTIC. Thank you for that call, sir. What's that, Mike? John in Meriden, hi.
Hello, sir. Great show. And just to remind your listeners, America was formed as a constitutional republic.
Yes, it was. Thank you for that, John. Always good to hear from you. And Gene in Simsbury. Hi, Gene. Hello, Gene.
Hi, how are you?
I am good, as a matter of fact. I'm just thinking about how everybody says hi, Gene, when they talk to you, when they greet you.
Yeah, hi, Gene. I know, right? Do you know how much? It's how many times I've gotten that? Well, I just
no, but it's very appropriate for this time.
Lynn Mountain, I hiked in Simsbury. It was nobody there. It was great, and it was fine. But anyway, I have a question for you. These people, everybody's like, very, 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 my son's supposed to get married in June. All these people have these things going on. Nobody's staying home, but they're staying home, but they're not. When you go to the grocery store, there's a lot of people.
Yes, any excuse to be out, we are grabbing.
Yeah, but it's not helping.
I know, but such is the human experience. I think on some level, it takes everybody Yeah, go ahead.
You are talking to millions of people, so you have it that you can kind of talk to people and tell them not to do that.
I'll tell them right now, do not go out. You put everybody at risk when you go out.
Well,
that is my message.
Why don't you tell them really scary and tell them what happened? There's a 32-year-old woman who's a nurse who just died in Connecticut. And I'm
Gene, I'm sorry. You're being run over by the traffic, but thank you for the call. No, we'll talk more about this. We will. Gene makes a good point.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.